If everybody could take their seats, please. All right, just before we get on to the last agenda item, Monkfish, Tobe Braun wanted to have an opportunity to discuss a letter she had submitted. I believe you had originally submitted this to the committee.
Go to the committee. This is a separate, briefer letter.
Okay, and you were right. I didn't go to the audience for comment or anything else under SCOLLOP, so please.
Okay.
Take an opportunity to briefly describe to the council.
Will do. My name's Tobe Braun. I worked for the Department of Marine Resources in Maine, focusing on state scallop management from 2007 until just last month when I left to start my own company. I appreciate the opportunity to address the council, and in recognition of the fact that I didn't raise my hand when I should have, I will skip over some of the comments that I submitted. You should have written copies of those comments. Basically, I'm here today to support the alternatives in the draft framework 23 that correct inequities that currently disadvantage Maine's general category scallop fishermen. Although I'm no longer employed at DMR, I remain committed to working to ensure these problems are corrected. For this reason, I support alternative 2.5.2 in framework 23, which would allow Maine's general category fishermen to declare state water-only trips as limited access days that sea vessels are currently allowed to do, and not have landings from these trips applied towards the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC. I also support alternative 2.5.5.2, which would prevent state water landings from being applied towards individuals' federal allocations, which are allocated as percentages of the recommended catch south of 4220. Some have expressed concerns that these alternatives may lead to an increase in effort in state water fisheries. I would like to point out that fewer than 10% of Maine's commercial scallop fishermen hold federal scallop permits. These alternatives that I support would merely grant federally permitted fishermen the same rights in Maine state waters as the majority of Maine scallop fishermen who do not hold federal permits. Maine DMR has made significant improvements to its scallop management program in recent years, and a scallop resource in Maine state waters currently appears to be far more abundant than the resource in the federal Northern Gulf of Maine waters. I believe the state of Maine should be trusted to manage its own waters, and the few fishermen who hold federal scallop permits should be given the same access to Maine state water fishery as those who do not hold federal permits. While I'm thankful that alternatives 2.5.2 and 2.5.5.2 are being considered, I'm disappointed that there are no alternatives to require limited access days at sea vessels to abide by the Northern Gulf of Maine 200-pound daily limit and to have their landings applied towards the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC. Currently, limited access days at sea vessels may fish in the federal waters of the Northern Gulf of Maine without restrictions and are only required to stop fishing when the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC is reached by general category vessels fishing under a 200-pound daily limit. So just to underscore, if productive pockets of scallops are found in the Northern Gulf of Maine, if there are several vessels fishing an area, general category vessels will need to leave and go back to port once they hit 200 pounds. Limited access days at sea vessels can stay and take tens of thousands or theoretically hundreds of thousands of pounds from that area, and they won't have to stop until the TAC is reached by general category vessels fishing under a 200-pound trip limit. The 200-pound limit and the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC were put in place to protect the Northern Gulf of Maine resource. I believe all vessels fishing within the Northern Gulf of Maine should be required to abide by them. I recognize that this doesn't really seem like a pressing concern at this time, given that the low resource abundance of the Northern Gulf of Maine currently generates very little attraction for limited access days at sea vessels. However, the Northern Gulf of Maine management area was created in recognition of the fact that the area experiences sporadic booms and busts. An FMAS survey conducted in the summer of 2009 found extremely high densities of small scallops in several areas of the Northern Gulf of Maine. In some of the areas, they were 18.8 times higher than similar-sized scallops in the Georges Bank closed area. Although the fate of these and other small scallops in the Northern Gulf of Maine is uncertain, there is reason to believe that the area may be about to experience one of these sporadic booms. I urge you to address this issue now before it becomes a higher profile and far more complicated matter. In closing, I would like to thank the Council for prioritizing the correction of inconsistencies in Northern Gulf of Maine management and urge you to add an alternative to the draft framework that would require limited access days at sea vessels to abide by the 200-pound daily limit when fishing in the Northern Gulf of Maine and to have their landings applied to the tack. Thank you for this consideration.
Thanks, Tom. Dr. Pierce?
All I can do is note what's described on page 6 of the summary of our committee meeting where, again, the presentation was provided, the request was made, but the committee did not act on that suggestion.
Okay. Anybody on the council wish to add that to the scallop framework? Jim?
I was at the meeting and I can't remember if anyone had a reason for not including that in the framework. It doesn't seem like an unreasonable request, and I think Toga's done a good job explaining it to us, and as far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't mind having it added to the amendment.
D?
We didn't talk about it at length. The committee was really just reminded from Amendment 11, the process that we went through and the rationale from Amendment 11 primarily was that when the Northern Gulf of Maine Management Program was established, the intent was not to, or one of the intents was not to change any of the current abilities of the limited access fleet, and that was pretty clear in the developing of that program that none of the measures would be designed to end up impacting current activities of the limited access fleet in that region. So that was, you know, one of the earlier cornerstones of that program. So that was the brief discussion we had at the committee meeting last month as well.
Council? Okay. Thanks, Dee. Thanks, Tobe. Phil. Terry, do the monkfish thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are three in your binder. There are three behind tab 10. There are three packages: a PDT report, a copy of Phil's PowerPoint presentation, a copy of the Amendment 5 final rule. And in the supplemental materials that were passed out yesterday is a copy of the summary of the Monkfish Committee meeting. Since our last council meeting, Amendment 5 was published on May 25th. That is the amendment that includes the ACLs, AM spec package, and the administrative changes. Framework 47, which we recently worked on, was submitted to the agency on May 3rd. That is the revised Northern ACT and associated specs. The committee met 1st of June in Portsmouth to review the PDT's white paper and to make a recommendation to the council. Phil's PowerPoint is going to summarize the white paper and the committee's recommended next steps. One action item today, which is a motion on behalf of the committee, so I'm going to turn it over to Phil. And following any questions, I'll make the motion on behalf of the committee.
Thank you. I'm going to give a presentation on the two-area white paper, and it is a summary presentation. I would encourage you to read the full report if you have the time. Essentially, I'll be covering the different areas that we considered, areas of consideration in separating the management in the two areas. And the summary of conclusions. Did I miss a slide there? No. The committee and the advisors reviewed the scoping comments on Amendment 6, which is the one in which the council is considering, as you know, catch air management. And it became apparent that there was a divergence of views, not unanimous in either area, but many of the comments from the southern area were either equivocal or opposed to catch shares, whereas in the northern area there were a substantial number of people who are interested in pursuing cat shares, particularly because they're already in a sector. So it became apparent to the committee that different fisheries and circumstances in the two areas might be better served by different management approaches, and wanted to explore what the considerations are in doing so. From a biological point of view, while we manage this as two stocks and it's assessed as two stocks, the evidence is increasing that it is a single stock. If not a single stock, probably a substantial amount of mixing. The growth rates of monkfish in the two areas are the same. The age and length at sexual maturity is statistically different, but not significantly different. They're almost the same. There are different recruitment patterns, but that may be attributable to survival from egg larvae and into young adulthood. And there's been some genetic work that suggests that fish from the two areas are not distinguishable. The family tree is doesn't matter which area you're from; you could be related to somebody in the other area. And also from tagging studies that we're learning. These are ongoing studies, and it's not conclusive yet. But not only the tagging studies here, but research in Europe and so on. Monkfish are capable of extensive movement. Despite their physiology, they do travel long distances. And, of course, the egg stage is a floating mat of eggs that is subject to winds and currents for the period of time that it's held together, and the larvae are also subject to currents. So probably it's one stock, and that's one consideration. The legal considerations, Magnuson-Stevens National Standard 3 speaks to this specifically, and it says, to the extent practicable, a stock shall be managed as a unit throughout its range or in close consideration and close coordination. And the guidelines elaborate on this and say that while a single stock management is preferred, stocks may be managed differently by geographic area if an FMP justifies it and if the management is coordinated. And also says that the choice of management units is not necessarily geographic, but could be organized around biological, economic, technical, social, or economic factors. So that's the legal considerations. In terms of operational considerations, the most significant one is that there's a significant, about a quarter of the vessels fish in both areas. And now, vessels may fish in both areas on the same trip. They may fish in both areas at different times of the same year, or they may fish in both areas from year to year, lots of different circumstances. The top graph here shows for a single year, 2009, the proportion of which area monkfish landed by limited access permits comes from. The blue is the southern area, the red is the northern area. And as you can see, this is all monkfish, not just the monkfish while on a day at sea. So it includes incidental monkfish catch by scallop vessels, for example, that have a limited access monkfish permit. And you can see that there's a substantial number of vessels that fish in both areas. The lower graph shows the landings of limited access monkfish vessels while they're on a day at sea and their incidental catch. The incidental catch is the green part. But for the vessels that fish in both areas, the green is not marked by areas, but it's just to show that there's about 30% of the limited access vessels have some incidental or directed landings in both areas. So that's probably the biggest operational consideration, but there are others. In terms of permits are not area-based, with the exception of the Category H permits for vessels fishing in the North Carolina-Virginia area. If you remain under one FMP, vessel permits right now allow fishing in both areas. But if you then go to a history-based allocation in one area, some vessels may be excluded from that area. On the other hand, vessels that are included in that history-based allocation, at least for now, their permit does not preclude them from fishing in the other area as well. Vessels with a history in both areas in different years may qualify under a history-based permit qualification revisitation to fish in both areas, but they may also have a reduced allocation because they would only have, say, 3 out of 5 years in one area and 2 out of 5 in another, and may be shortchanged on one or the other. Another operational consideration is respect to Massachusetts, which has state waters abutting both management areas, so that the plans, especially if there are two FMPs, will need to coordinate and account for the state waters fishing in Massachusetts. Another operational consideration specific to groundfish sectors. Sector vessels have ACE for groundfish stocks that overlap monkfish management area boundary as it's currently written. I put two examples up here, but all 15 or 19, there are 15 maps, 19 stocks affected, are at the back of the white paper. Georges Bank cod, the line runs squarely down the middle. Yellowtail flounder, the Georges Bank yellowtail flounder is pretty well divided. Gulf of Maine yellowtail is exclusively in the northern area and doesn't really present an operational issue. And then you have, for some of the stocks, I think there's 3 or 4 of them, a very small portion, a little corner, you can't even see it on the overhead there, the southwest corner of the boundary line. So there's a little overlap. That may be de minimis. But in any case, you have this issue where a groundfish vessel fishing on Georges Bank cod, for example, in a sector, could potentially be fishing on 2 stock components of monkfish. And that's a consideration that would have to be taken into account. There are also considerations with regards to permit qualification and transfers. Under if the two FMP approach is adopted, the councils will need to coordinate permit qualification so that all current permit holders qualify, or at least there's an explanation why they wouldn't qualify for one or the other. The question of whether vessels can be permitted to fish in both areas would have to be resolved, as would the one about a vessel that does not have a permit in a particular area. Could it be transferred to that area? In other words, if a vessel is sold from the south to the north and the monkfish permit goes, is that a valid permit in the north? And if that permit has other permits associated with it, what happens to them? Are they dissolved? Do they stay with it? Just some complications that would have to be considered. If one of the areas goes under an allocation system, then the permit categories that we have in monkfish right now essentially rendered obsolete, because vessels will have either a PSC or an individual allocation and will be able to accumulate quota or sell quota, and therefore the permit category, the basis for the permit category is insignificant. However, it would probably, the permit category should be retained associated with that permit simply for the purposes if the vessel wants to be transferred to the area that has not gone onto an allocation system, that it could come in back as a Category C or a Category D permit and maintain the original distribution of those permits. We discussed some of the socioeconomic considerations without a lot of specifics. It's hard to talk about it, but most of the direct impacts, as I have mentioned several times here, from a socioeconomic point of view, are likely to affect vessels that fish in both areas. A vessel that never fished in the north or never fished in the south is not likely to be directly affected, maybe indirectly affected by cascading events, but directly not likely to be affected. Whether you have two rules in one FMP or two FMPs with separate lead counsels, regardless of which approach is adopted, the vessels that fish in both areas are going to have to change fishing and business plans. Now, that's not to say that it couldn't work out for the better, but it does require them to reconsider how they do business and rearrange any long-term plans that they've already established. If such vessels are excluded from one area under whichever approach is adopted, there's potentially the loss of income. That's not to say that the income couldn't be recovered and, in fact, exceeded by a new set of rules somewhere else under the new set of rules in the other area, but potentially there is a loss of income if they depend on fishing in both areas. Under the two FMP approach, qualifying vessels that qualify to fish in both areas will essentially have to participate in two FMP processes led by two councils, potentially have two different reporting and administrative procedures depending on the level of coordination between the two plans. The net effect of all of this is really going to boil down to what the specifics of the two different management plans are, or two different management programs, in terms of what the social and especially the economic impacts will be. So we can't really give much more on that, but it is a consideration. There are also administrative and enforcement considerations. Clearly, if you have two sets of rules, different rules under one FMP, or you have two FMPs, the level of complexity increases and does require coordination of the two areas. It will also call for the increased importance of accurate catch monitoring by area, particularly on transboundary trips, especially under the accountability measures and ACL scenario. And also there will be an increase in the council resources and NIMS resources to develop and administer two FMPs or two different sets of rules. In terms of the considerations with regard to ACLs and AMs, we will have to establish ACLs for the two areas, something we already do under the current management approach. But if we go to two FMPs, then the new council, the lead council for the southern one, would have to adopt their own set of ACLs and accountability measures under that FMP. Of course, these would have to be coordinated. And it would be complicated by the fact that if it is determined to be a single stock, then there'd have to be some kind of negotiations or division of the single stock ACL into the two areas. We did throw out the idea that you could model that after the TMGC, where there's negotiations to divide the ACL between the two areas. But that will add to the lead time in setting specifications. In terms of coordinating the plans, the accountability measures should be set in a way so that one area does not become accountable for overages in the other, or that you have effort shifts as a result of, say, restrictive accountability measures in one area, making an area more attractive to vessels in the other area and causing downstream impacts. Excuse me a second. I'm going to get a little water. In summary, we considered the two approaches, whether you have different rules under one FMP or two separate FMPs, north and south, that you have likely have a single biological stock or extensive mixing between two stocks, but and that there's no legal impediments to separate management of a single stock. You have a substantial number of vessels that fish in both areas within a trip, within a year, or from year to year. And another major consideration is the overlap of groundfish stock areas with the that overlap the monkfish boundary. Permit qualification and permit transfers are considerations that need to be taken up, especially between the two areas. You likely have vessels that have to change their business practices and their business relationships as a result of this new approach. It will increase FMP complexity and the resources required to manage by the councils and NIMPs. There are enforcement considerations and monitoring of catch. Allocation processes for the ACL, especially if you have two FMPs, and separate accountability measures that have to be coordinated. After hearing all of this and considering comments, the committee recommends, and Terry will make a motion to this effect, managing under a single FMP and not to split the FMP into two separate plans. The councils will have to decide whether they concur with that, and then if there are, if they do want to approach the pursue the two FMP approach, we need to get clarification on how that is done. If that's done by decree of the secretary, or if it's done through an amendment process, has to be done before we can pursue the development of the management measures under the separate FMPs. It's unclear yet how that would be done. If it's a single FMP but with two different sets of rules, it could be done within Amendment 6 that's already been started. It still will require justification and coordination of the management of the two areas and taking into account all the considerations that we've identified in this report. And so after all of that, the committee and the advisory panel are going to begin to focus on the goals and objectives for Amendment 6. And to that end, they've tasked the plan development team and the advisory panel to define the issues and problems with the current plan that would be addressed by Amendment 6. And that would be the basis for the goals and objectives for Amendment 6. They did, in their last sets of meetings, come up with a bullet list of about 10 or 12 items, and they're in the meeting summary here. But those lists of issues lack sufficient specificity to have a real substantial dialogue about them. And therefore, what we're trying to do now is describe in greater detail, for example, under the term latent effort, how much latent effort is there, what different kinds of latent effort are there, where are those permits that aren't being used, or why aren't vessels using their days at sea, and so on. Get a little more detail on them to see how big a problem is it, how widespread, who's affected, and does that justify pursuing a range of alternatives in Amendment 6.
Thanks, Phil. Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Phil, and all the PDT for the work you did in putting together the white paper. Questions for Phil in the PowerPoint presentation? All right, then. Motion. On behalf of the committee, I recommend that monkfish continue to be managed under one FMP.
Any discussion on the motion? Mike Leary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What if this fails?
I think we're still under one FMP.
Yeah. Okay. It was a productive meeting.
Phil?
I would like to point out for the council members who weren't at the committee meeting, the original motion was to not pursue the two FMP approach. To which Mike Leary asked, what if this motion passes? It's the status quo. So I think he's just having fun with his swan song here.
I know what that's like, Mike. It's all right. Ready for the question? No? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Fourteen opposed, abstentions. Motion carries 14 zippity doo dah to zippity doo dah. Terry.
That concludes my report. But Erlen has some comments to bring to us from the mid.
Erlen, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is from the request from the Garden State Seafood Association on behalf of the Southern Management Area fishermen. There are four bullets here. That there be equal representation on Monkfish Oversight Committee from both councils, equal geographic representation on Monkfish AP panels. AM6 have two separate management strategies, one for south and the other one for the north, and also request that meetings be held alternatively in New England and Mid-Atlantic. Thank you.
Erlen, did your council, you said that was from the Garden State Seafood. Did the Mid-Atlantic Council receive a similar letter? Was it CC'd? And did the your council make those same recommendations?
There was an email going around, but it was not presented to our council, no.
Okay. Phil, did you get were you able to write down those 4 points?
Equal representation on the AP, north and south. I think we have 7 to 8 right now. That's about as equal as you can get with 15 members. Separate management strategies for Amendment 6, north and south. Alternate meetings, Mid-Atlantic and New England. That would be committee meetings and AP meetings both. And what was the fourth one?
They want an equal number of seats on the committee, I think.
Of what? How is that equal? How is that different than equal representation of AP panel with north and south? Oh, you said committee also? Oh, okay.
Terry?
As Phil just commented, we do have equal participation on the AP, essentially 7 to 8. At any one AP meeting, there's never a quorum, hardly much. Phil's been trying to get an AP meeting set up for the summer and is having a very difficult time. So we do the best with what we have. I would like to take the discussion about adding additional mid-members up with a chair and executive director of the two committees sometime after this meeting.
Well,
I don't know what it is now, but I thought it was always with Dogfish and Monkfish, we'd have, say, for instance, 5 members in the chair and the mid would have 4 on Monkfish or something like that. I thought we always had it balanced with the council, lead council having the chair and the other council having the vice chair. I thought we were doing exactly what they said.
Well, not exactly. We have 9 members from New England with a chair and 3 members from the mid with a vice chair.
Mary Beth.
Yeah, I don't want to belabor it since Terry said that he would speak with the executive committee, but I just would point out that there's a northern zone and a southern zone, but that split is not equal to the split for the geographic regions of the council. The southern zone starts in Massachusetts. So it's geographically not a 50-50 split to start with. Clearly they need to be represented, but I'm not going to add anything.
I'll pass those recommendations on to the next person that sits in this chair. Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, I just had one question about the committee meeting itself, and one of the actions that almost was taken by the committee, but certainly relates to one of the bullets in the list provided by the advisors as to concerns, issues. and that is, and I'd appreciate the chair, if the chair could elaborate as to what the nature of the problem is. And this would be on page 3, where there was a motion perfected by a friendly amendment. There was a substitute for it. Nevertheless, the point was made that monkfish catch limits may be preventing full utilization of other species' ACLs. I would ask the chair if he might be in a position to elaborate a little bit. What exactly is the nature of that problem, assuming as seen by the advisors?
Thank you, David. The problem, as to my understanding, is that the groundfish and/or the monkfish OY isn't being realized because of the monkfish days, it's a combination of the days at sea and the sector of groundfish programs, and that the sector vessels would have a better opportunity to reach their OY if they were able to fish monkfish and groundfish under one sector management plan.
Phil, you want to add a little?
Yes, Terry's correct, but that I think is more relevant to the coordination of the management regimes within the area. But specifically to David's question, the comment was with regards to, say, the monkfish incidental catch limit. If a sector vessel is fishing and getting some flats, some gray sole or something, and getting their and catching some monkfish, and they are exceeding the reasonable amount of days that they want to be out in terms of incidental monkfish catch, they have to leave and leave some of that groundfish sector species in the water, or continue to fish and discard monkfish so that they can catch what they want to catch of the other species. Is that right, Jim? I mean, because I think you would understand it better than.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot. When you're monk fishing in the northern area, it's really a mixed fisheries. It's not a directed monk fisheries. So when you're mixing mixed fisheries, you may be catching four items, just hake, a few cod, a few pollock, and some monks. So if you're catching 700 pounds of monks a day and you can make that mixed fisheries work by catching 700 pounds of monk a day plus your other three or four items, you put together a day's pay. So you run out of your monk days, and now you're on the bycatch of 300 pounds. Even though you didn't get your full, we're not catching the full utilization of monks, now you're on a bycatch, so you're forced to, as Phil said, you're either forced to throw that extra 400 pounds away to catch the other three or four species in the 300 pounds. But even worse than that, it makes the day not pay. So you can't stay there and get your dabs, and you can't get the rest of the other species because the physical dollars for that day is not enough. So we're underutilizing both of them but because of that. And that if you moved away from that system so that you ended up with your ace, then you can make the whole day work. I don't know if I'm explaining it well, but it's a nature of the mixed trawl fishery.
Anything else from the council? David?
Just a question. It's looking at Phil's outline here now, I assume this has to go to the Mid-Atlantic Council to have a potentially concurring vote on the same thing. And so I guess I'd ask, first of all, what happens if it doesn't, if they don't concur and they want to split the plan? And then the follow-up question would be, assuming that they agree to keep it as a single FMP, what does the committee do next? Is the council today going to charge the committee with a next step?
I understand that the Mid-Atlantic voted for one plan last week. Is that right, Erling? Okay. Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The follow-up to that is, as Phil said, the PD is developing problem statements based on the committee discussion and input from the AP, with the intent for the committee to develop goals and objectives to bring back the council, hopefully at the September meeting.
Thanks, Dave. Phil?
My understanding, there was no motion at the Mid-Atlantic Council. They considered this, and in light of Mike's comment, really, there is no need to do anything because essentially we are managing one FMP. And the councils will both participate in the development of the range of alternatives for Amendment 6. And ultimately, their only responsibility is to approve the final action. And they so hopefully they're engaged enough so that by the time it comes down to that legally required approval by the Mid-Atlantic Council, they will be fully engaged. We've often come to that question that Dave Gaethel asked, what if they don't? And we've managed to squeak by for the last 10 years with approval by both councils. And so we don't know the answer to that question.
Chairman, I've had a couple of discussions with the Mid-Atlantic chair, and he's indicated that it's his desire to have a good amount of public outreach and meetings, in the, at least in the Mid-Atlantic zone, and he'd be interested in spearheading those with input from the New England Council, obviously. But, you know, if it's a question of resources, his opinion is that his council budget will support having additional meetings above and beyond what we normally would schedule directly with the industry. Phil.
Yeah. My sense from the scoping comments is that the majority of people feel that the current plan is working. Maybe there are some improvements could be made within the current context. And with Amendment 5, we've just adopted a three-year specification for that area. There was a sense from some members in the fishermen in the southern area that they would consider a catch share, but they want to see specifically what it means to them in terms of the numbers that they would get before they embrace the idea. They're not going to embrace the idea just philosophically. So we could proceed with developing a northern component of Amendment 6 and essentially just do the specifications in the southern area if that's, you know, one approach. But I think that the even if we do it that way, we still have to deal with the vessels that fish in both areas. That's the one that's going to absorb most of our conversation, I think.
Right. That's all committee level discussion and work. Anything else under monkfish? Anything under goosefish?
Anglers?
No? Okay. All right, then we'll break until 8:30 tomorrow. I just want to remind people that there's some additional items that we had placed on the agenda for tomorrow. I can go through them quickly. One was we were going to have a discussion that was a carryover from day one on the secretarial action on herring reporting. Sally McGee is going to be here fresh off her, what was it, the Bomer meeting. She just wants to give the council a quick update on what happened there. National Ocean Workshop.
National Marine Spatial Planning Workshop.
Yeah. Erling indicated if the council's interested, he'd give a brief mackerel report. And then we had a tabled motion on the so-called research fishing that we were going to address, in addition to the items printed on the agenda. Okay?
Okay.
See you at 8:30.
Good.